racetrack.
Yep.
Jesus, game is Dick Tracy.
The game is Dick Tracy. Exactly. But it
that,
also
that one might be. That one might be out of vogue by now.
No, it's not. It's timeless. The game is Dick Tracy. It still plays.
Yeah, good. Nobody, the young people will know who Dick Tracy is.
Well, then let them go crack a book.
Yeah, crack a book. You know, speaking of birthdays, we have to send out birthday wishes today. Bob Baffert.
Nice.
67. 67. Getting up there, Bob.
67.
Pretty soon his hair's going to turn white.
Bump, bump. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. I'm sort of shocked that he's that close, that I'm that close in age to him. I mean, now that I've turned 60, it's kind of funny. I guess I never realized how, that he was only 7 years older, going back 25 years. I didn't realize. Now I feel like I didn't accomplish anything in my life.
he makes a bunch of people feel that way. I was just reading some of his accomplishments, and really, so many times when in all sports, not just racing, when we're in the midst of incredible streaks, records, achievements, however you want to look at it, we don't really notice. We kind of take it for granted. I think you can compare it to the Belichick / Brady years that we've gone through here. When you're in the midst of it, you almost dislike it, to tell you the truth, because it's like, oh no, them again. You don't have as much respect for it as you will when you look back on it, and you say, you look back on Bob Baffert's training career and how he made the switch from thoroughbreds, from quarter horses to thoroughbreds. And, as he tells the story, getting beat the first time in the Derby with that Cavalier.
Yep.
And thinking, I'll never be back. You can understand that feeling. I've got here. I got a horse to the Derby. I get beat a nose, and I'm never going to be back. That would be an easy thing to. But now, of course, we look at that. We say that's ridiculous. Of course, he's going to be back. He's going to win. He's going to win one. And he's going to win a bunch more. But when you look at his achievements in the Triple Crown, particularly the Triple Crown races, but everything, obviously, particularly the Triple Crown, what he's done in that series, it's really amazing. It's really amazing. He's not close to being done. He's rolling along right now at 67. So there's no mandatory retirement age for trainers either. One detail that kind of surprised me, I think when he was, I can't remember which Derby win it was, but I think he was like 62 or 63, and the comment was he's the second oldest trainer to win a Derby. And I think the oldest is Charlie Whittingham.
Mm-hmm. Ferdinand.
So if he was the oldest then, he's been the oldest since. He's done it many more times. He's a multiple second oldest winning trainer. And I don't know if Bob will hang around long enough to outlast the bald eagle, Charlie Whittingham. But he's certainly got a good head start.
No, no doubt. It is amazing when you think about it. And I think Haskins talked about the Cavalier. And in fact, at one time, I don't know if he still has it, but Haskin had a Cavalier email address. Kavanier was part of a Haskin email address, I remember, way back. And he talks about that, that experience with Baffert, and that how, you know, Baffert thought, this was my chance and I'm never going to get another one. It's pretty funny.
You understand, but that the success that he's had really is remarkable. And I don't know, we're in the middle of it. We don't really notice it, and we get used to it. We become accustomed to it. And okay, who's Baffert have this year for the Derby or, you know, the Triple Crown races? We don't even hardly think of it anymore. But well, someday people are going to look back on it and say, "Wow, look what this guy did!" But oh, the game was different then. That's what they'll say. Well, the game was different then. Just like when we look back on Sonny Jim Fitzsimmons, we say, the game was different back then.
It's true. It's true. Well, give me a little read before we talk about things like Beat the Host and those results, but some overall weekend thoughts. How active were you?
I didn't go to Cincinnati. I stayed home this weekend, and I'll tell you what, my wife, she made a little comment to me, because yesterday I had an amazing day. In the morning, I did a radio show out in airs in San Francisco, Sam Spear show. And then I played golf. that was January 12th. And I played golf, and it was amazing. It was wonderful. Little windy, little gusty, but as you mentioned earlier, the weather this weekend was just, and actually, for a couple days, it's been really Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We're all reasonable days to be outside. And then I came home, I jumped into the races, and I had the football on television. I had the racing on my laptop. I had the golf from Hawaii later on in the afternoon on my phone, and I had the PPs on my iPad, and I was stretched out on the couch in the living room with all this going on. And my wife came in the room. She said, you got it pretty good, don't you? I said, yeah, I do. And she served me my traditional Sunday meal of lox and bagels with cream cheese and onions and the whole works. But that's what I did this weekend, Steve.
Not so bad. Not so bad.
That was my Sunday. And the racing, I along with the new year, I kind of turned over a new leaf. Not so much a resolution, but a suggestion. Is that different from a resolution? I think it is.
Yeah.
I'm not resolving to do something. I'm just suggesting that I do something. And the suggestion with the horseplay is that do not play as many pick fives, pick sixes, pick fours. Concentrate a little bit more on wins and doubles if you like the race. We've talked about this before. But coming off a string of four out of fives and five out of sixes that had me yelling at the computer, which my wife said, "You haven't done that in a while." I said, I can't get it done. I suggested to myself that I cut back to, you know, win wagering and some double wagering. And if the odd carryover comes up, go ahead and jump in. So that's what I'm going to try and follow through with for this early part of the season. And I did pretty well yesterday. And you know what happens? I think you hang around a lot longer, or your money hangs around a lot longer by just looking for, you know, looking for decent, not long shots unless they jump out at you, but just, you know, trying to find a winner at a decent price in each race. It's fun. You're involved. It's using all your handicapping skills. And you're not, I feel I'm not as hurried. But sometimes when you're trying to put in a pick five or a pick six, if you haven't mapped out your time to both handicap and construct your wagers, man, you find yourself hurrying and you make mistakes, and or you don't include horses, mistakes of omission, where you don't include a horse that you probably should have on hindsight. Right.
Yep.
So I'm going to try that for a while, see how it goes, and I'm going to keep my fingers crossed that the Rainbow Six at Gulfstream, that jackpot can go unclaimed until Pegasus Day, where I assume either Pegasus Day or the day after they will have a dispersal. I assume. I don't know anything. I'm just kind of guessing. So that, you know, and if the odd carryover pops up along the way, I'll dive in and go after that. But just for a while, I can't say, you know, sometimes it's funny because sometimes when you're handicapping and you're playing the races, your handicapping has gone sour. In other words, you're picking horses that finish seventh or eighth, or they're just not running. And it's happening, you know, that's going to happen once in a while. It shouldn't happen like, you know, two out of five races or three out of five races. Something's wrong. You're either very unlucky at that point, or there's a problem with your methodology. You're coming up with the wrong horses. So I know my handicapping's been solid because I've been getting five out of six out, four out of five. You know, and of course, I'm hitting the odd one here and there, but not the good one, not the one that you're, you know, it's like fishing and catching all the ones you have to throw back. I'm not getting any of the big ones. So it wasn't a handicapping problem as much as either, how do I say this, either a time constraint or a concentration issue where you're not going all the way through, or sometimes it's a budget issue where you're cutting down and you cut to where you want it to be manageable for your budget, and you made one too many cuts. That happens. So I thought, you know what, let's just sharpen the handicapping. Let's get back on track here. Go a little while to build up the confidence, and when the opportunities present themselves, we'll take advantage of them. So that's kind of where we're at. That was my suggestion for the new year. That'll probably I hope that lasts through the month.
Well, and I mean, to tie it in, and in fact, we can fold it into, you know, particularly the Saturday results at Gulfstream at Santa Anita. Millie Baldy beat the host, and Millie hit Jolie Olympica, the very talented-looking Mandela, Brazilian bred, and also caught Wicked Solution to get things going at Gulfstream, a pair of $11 you know, totals in terms of the mutuals. It was generally a chalky sequence again on Saturday until late when you know, Tusk was a decent price going off, I think, is the fifth choice, 8-1, 8.5-1. And then at Santa Anita, Policy was a square price too. Those were really the only, you know, after last week where we talked about how, you know, how chalky the sequence was. But I'll just mention, I mean, from what you're talking about, Johnny, on the ticket building, you know, I found, you know, the really the right horses to do okay in the multis, notably Tusk, in that tropical turf. I tried to tiptoe through the Marshawas River without Chad's horse, Magic Star, who I thought had to improve too much to challenge, you know, the two obvious players. So I had her and Munchkin Money as C's. So ultimately, the thing paid 400 and change, the 50-cent pick five. Yeah. So it wasn't, you know, this wasn't a four-figure pick five miss. And actually the pick four paid 150, which was, you know, quite suitable. It covered both the investments on the two sequences. But I can identify with, you know, keeping a budget in mind. And I do it because when I write the analysis up, when I put together my, you know, my opinions, which I offer out there, I try to keep the number, particularly the pick five and the pick four, at, you know, under $75. To me, you know, when you start offering suggested plays that are, you know, 120, 144, you know, for pick fours and pick fives, it's just silly, because the people that are looking at it, they're not spending that on multi-race wagers. I'm not going to suggest that people do that either. So I've got a budget that I keep in mind, and that's my budget too. I mean, it's how I more or less are playing these sequences. And, you know, then there's the all A's, which typically are $18, $18 to $24 for the small budget player, the smaller budget player. And so I'm not saying I'm locked into those numbers, but it's generally my own approach. So that's what I write up.
Yeah, they're comfortable numbers. And that's probably, you know, another point of, but I guess with me to say, and I can give you some examples later if we get around to it, talking about some of these top winning bets at ExpressBet this week. I'm not, excuse me, in the past, I haven't been a good enough handicapper to find these big priced horses that blow up a pick five or a pick six with less than, I'm like around probably a 150 to 200 guy. And you're going to catch a lot of small ones along the way, but obviously the more money you spend, your chance of catching a bomb somewhere and a big payoff increase. There's no doubt about that. If you're a decent handicapper. But the issue is, for me, it was more a matter of just plain frustration. Not so much the bankroll, because I was always within my comfort zone. I'm too old to go back to those days. I was always in my comfort zone, but it was more the frustration of not hitting. And I would invest that money into a pick five, pick six, or whatever, and then not play the races. The other, you know, not play the races on the way. So, you know, you come to the end of the day and you've got five out of six, and you put in a decent sized pick six ticket, and you haven't bet any of the other winners all afternoon.
Right.
So that's aggravating, you know, and it's just a function of, again, it's not that, there's nothing wrong with your handicapping, because you're picking a good percentage of winners, but let's focus a little bit and let's cash on some of those winners and wait for the other opportunities. Having said all of that, having collected on very nice pick sixes and pick fives in my career, and superfectas, which I hardly play at all. But having done that, and had success, look, that's where the money is. That's where the big hits are. So I don't blame anyone that says, you know, this is what I like to play. This is the way, you know, you make money in this. Hey, look, you're right. But I got to a point where I was so frustrated that I was not enjoying my time playing the races. And that's why I do it.
Right.
Because I enjoy it. I don't do it to make money. That's why I have a job. I do it to enjoy myself. So for the challenge, for the, you know, you're digging through the past performances, you're looking for clues, the work that you do, and I won't even call it work, but the effort that you put in, the journey, is almost as good as the destination. You know, if you enjoy it, and that's why I'm playing, is to enjoy it. I'm not playing to make a living at it. Some guys do. I'm not. But I'm serious about it, and I try very hard. But I wasn't enjoying it. I'd become frustrated. So I said, look, you have to find a way to make this more enjoyable again. And, you know, it cracks me up because we all have these stories. But I can tell my story. I went to college in Southern California, not far from Santa Anita. And my college sweetheart and I, on Sundays, we'd get the LA Times and we'd go out to Santa Anita and we'd sit in the infield and spread out a blanket and bask in that California sunshine. And I'd have the racing form. She'd have the LA Times and that it's a big, thick edition, like the Sunday New York Times, and go through it. And we'd spend the whole day there on like $60.
Yeah.
And I was like, how do we do that? $50 or $60, you know, you'd have a hot dog or a beer or something. Like, how did I do that? Well, one way I know is that there were only three exactas then. Third, the fifth, fifth, seventh, and ninth, and then they added the third. So there were four, third, fifth, seventh, and ninth. And they were $5 minimums. And that was it. There were doubles, obviously. Exactas, yeah, only in those races. And that was it. So, you know, I was probably betting win, place, show, and maybe exacta once in a while. But you think back, how did you do that? I mean, shouldn't you be a better handicapper now? It's not the handicap. It's that we talk about it all the time. Take out, if you're playing often, it will grind you down. And it's the challenge of the wager. It's the probability of hitting that wager. For sports wagers out there, it's like parlay. You know, I love hitting a 14 parlay, but they're tough. They're not easy. And if you want to compare it to takeout, here's what happens to you. When you hit the parlay, you're not getting paid what you should mathematically be paid. You're getting paid less. So that eats into long-term your profits. So we'll take a trip back to, you know, win and place wagering if the odds warrant it, and we'll play some doubles along the way, and we'll get back to enjoying playing the races for a while. And until there's a carryover that we'll dig in and we'll go after. Maybe we'll talk Will Schwartz into joining me for a ticket.
Well, Johnny, let's talk about who parlayed Saturday's action into a beat the host victory. And numbers, again, as I'm indicating, kind of hinting, the totals were not enormous, not yet, but we did have a couple reach the 200 and change. Matt Keough, the big winner on the weekend.
Well, actually, what's funny is that the winners for this week and the weekly prizes Kevin McFarland, 138.50. He won the $1,000 weekly prize. Marvin Foy, $132. He got back $750. And Jeff Boussin, $126.50. And he got $250 on top of that as prize money. The seasonal totals, which is what I think you were referring to,
yeah,
as we go along here, the seasonal totals, Matthew Keogh now at $206.50, Paul Diaz, $203.50, and Ruben Genovese, $191.50. Those are the cumulatives from the first 2 weeks. So as you say, Steve, the winning totals have been low. And I'm going to keep an eye on this. I did it this week, and I did it for last week. So just we talked about last week how the numbers were low. The winner's total last week was 107.50. So I looked at what the perfect score would have been, and the perfect score would have been 146. So the 107.50 is compared to 146, 73%. Of the perfect score, if my math is correct. I may have blown this whole thing, but if my math is correct, it's 73%. This week, the perfect score was 188.50, and the winner's score was 138.50, and that was 73% of a perfect score. So, because those numbers came up the same, exactly 73%, I question my mathematics, but we'll leave that to someone to figure out. But as far as what I looked at, the total was higher, the perfect score was higher. If you picked every winner of every race, that's the ideal perfect score, 188.50, and you're right, that's very low. Kevin McFarland, 138.50, won the first place prize. He had 73% of the possible perfect score. But the fact that they came up the same number as the first week, I wonder if that's a target. I know we've done this before. I know I've done it before. And that's about the range where you find it. But it was kind of unusual to see it hit the exact same number. Anyway, beat the host. If you're not playing, go to expressbet.com, register for Beat the Host. You have to have an account with ExpressBet. Register for Beat the Host. You can play each Saturday in January and February. Weekly prizes, $2,000 distributed to the top three weekly players. Your goal is to beat the host, because once you beat the host, you advance to the Beat the Host Championship at the $10,000 competition. And then also, we have the cumulative totals, which we keep all season long. Your number's 206.50, 206.50 right now. That's the leader. It's not a crazy number after 2 weeks, and that's because the horses that have won have not been big payoffs. A total perfect score for the season so far would be 334.50. And the total score of the winners would be 246, which came out to 73%, which it should. So I'm hoping my math is all right there. And then as far as Sweep the Host, we like to keep track of that. Of course, opening week, we had quite a few people qualify for the championship. And this week, we knocked it down a little bit. We're down to 395, down from over 600 the first week. Down to 395 as Sweep the Host eligibles. So if you want to look for something to do, this is a live $5 win wager on one horse in each of 10 races, Saturdays in January and February. That's a lot of fun. The prize structure is great. You keep what you win. They're live bets. So if you pick a winner or two, you'll pay for the whole thing. Also, we're keeping the running total and the top players for the seasonal cumulative total will receive prizes, $10,000 in prizes. So there's still time to get in and chase those seasonal prizes. You're behind, but not too far behind.
Yeah. No, it's early yet, and the numbers have been – you can only hope that or expect that there's going to be some prices that will help people work their way up the cumulative leaderboard. I will admit that Tina will not be eligible for Sweep the Host because after last week where, you know, she did get past Jeremy, I forgot to remind her to put a ticket together. And, you know, we were traveling, and so it was a little hectic. But I'm just looking. If she had asked my help, and based on my own tickets that I had in, she would have beaten Millie, actually.
You know what's great about Express Bet? If you explain that to us, we put you back in.
Yeah, we'll see.
In fact, according to what you would have bet, she would have actually won the weekly prize. So we'll have to adjust.
She would have had four winners because I singled endorsed. I would have told her to play endorsed and you know, that NY traffic, anybody who heard Safi Joseph on the show last Monday, I don't know if that contributed to him being 2-1, but I mean, Safi Joseph made it obvious last Monday that he expected that horse to run well. I mean, frankly, right now, Safi Joseph could tell you every single horse that he sends out seems to be running well. But he made it clear he thought that was a talented horse that they were excited about running. And he ran to advertising. I think that horse of Mandela's, the Brazilian. There were two Brazilian winners on Saturday because for those that Ohio is what? Is he 7 now or 8? Winning back-to-back Cotton Fitzsimmons at Turf Paradise. He's also Brazilian, so it was a nice weekend for Brazilians. But that Jolie Olympica looks like the goods.
Yeah, you'd have to think so. What an impressive performance that was, huh? And so many times we've had some really good ones, some stars come over from Brazil, Argentina over the years. But most of the time, they need to step up their games. But Jolie Olympica did exactly that. And with a neat track record, I think, by 2/5 of a second, which very impressive, very impressive.
There's
a couple things, you know, obvious things that you think they're obvious, but you mentioned Safi Joseph. Peter Miller at Santa Anita has kind of got the same thing going on. Just about anything he runs over there is live, and you have to kind of include it in whatever you're doing. Obviously, Rosario is getting, you know, getting the prime mounts.
Yep.
Flavia Pratt, a little slow start for him, I think. I know he was sick earlier when the season started. He's off to a little bit of a slow start. Bejarano is off to a bit of a slow start. Sadio looks. There are a couple riders that you wouldn't mind having when you do your handicapping, and Sadio is kind of one of those, I would say emerging, because he's done well. He's already proved he belongs, but he's one of those guys that I think is getting the job done when his name comes up. And then you've got a guy like Mike Smith who, you know, you got to pay attention to him, whatever he's riding, because he's very selective. And I don't know how much time we have, but part of the handicapping process, if you like to look at jockeys in your handicapping process, when you find the top rider, the hot rider, a guy that's doing the best, like a Rosario or like a Pratt when he's rolling, anybody when they're rolling. The process of a trainer's getting a ride, getting a certain jockey, is the trainer will approach the jockey agent, or the jockey agent may approach the trainer, but in either case, that's how, you know, if a trainer goes after a jockey's agent, in other words, if he goes to Ron Anderson to get Rosario, a lot of your handicapping has already been done. In most cases, nothing's 100% in this game at all. But in most cases, that's a live horse. Because trainers, I don't want to say it's an unwritten law or code or whatever, but just trainers will get better riders when in relationship to the chance that they think their horse has. In most cases, not all cases, in most cases. And what happens sometimes is the top-level riders, the top-level agents for the top-level riders will share mounts. In other words, if you happen to have a top jockey and a trainer comes to you and says, can you ride my horse in the fourth race next Thursday? And you happen to have a mount there already, and you might turn around and say to him, well, I have one, but I can get you, you know, the second leading rider. So there's a lot of sharing that goes on back and forth. I mean, it's more specific to the personalities, to how they get along, how the agents get along. But in most cases, the top agents will share mounts. And that's a two-way street. So when the other guy's doubled up, he'll come find you, you know. So the top riders, so they win the most races because they are talented, no doubt about it. But they're also getting what should be the top mounts in each race. So following jockeys in your handicapping can be a good thing to do. It also, you have to be careful. Because a lot of times you'll see a jock's been riding a horse 3-4 times in a row, and all of a sudden he jumps to another horse, and you say, well, he must know that the other horse is, but that may not always be the case. You can't take it at face value. He may jump because he'd already given a call to the other guy, and he may ride a lot of horses for the other guy. The owner might know the jockey personally. I mean, I'm just giving you some of the reasons that, you know, that as an agent, I've ridden the quote-unquote wrong horse in a race. So it doesn't automatically mean that the other horse is better. But when you follow the top 3, 4, 5, top 5 riders, when you follow the mounts that they're on, know that it doesn't happen by accident. And it's not always because the agent is a genius. It helps to have a genius for an agent. But it's not always that. It's the trainers. Look, if you're a trainer and you've got a top horse, if your horse is ready to win, I mean, this horse is doing really well, you got a good spot for him, why wouldn't you go get a top rider? Unless you're, now, it doesn't happen all the time, exactly. Sometimes trainers have steady guys that they like to use. Guys that work horses for them, and they'll ride those riders. But if you need to win a race, you're going to go get Tom Brady to be your quarterback. Does he win all the time? No. He's sitting at home right now with us. But when you need to win, you want the best out there you can get. And that's really what happens a lot of the time.
Sure.
So I know people know all that, but I thought it was just, I thought of it this weekend, and I thought maybe we'd do a crash course on how it works.
No. Well, time well spent. And on the top agent front, I've signed on to keep track of Umberto Rispoli, who I know you gave Ron Anderson the business about finally getting you know, a Goomba to represent. But I, he
down.
Seems he's up to 4 wins now on the year and 16 mounts, and it's obvious that some people have signed on, not the least of which the Cruel Jack team, I think, has got what, maybe 2 or 3 of those wins.
Yeah. And the other thing to keep in mind is Ron has Rosario. So what's the first thing out of Ron's mouth when a trainer asked him, is Rosario open in this race? And he says, no, I have a mount. How about Rispoli?
that's like in Godfather 3. Meucci, who's Meucci? I can give you Meucci.
Yeah, exactly. So what that means is he's getting shots at live mounts because guys may be coming for Rosario, and they're getting Rispoli.
Meucci.
Yeah. And then also, obviously, the jock can ride. None of this works if the jock can't ride.
That's not, right. This kid can ride.
If he's not talented, the trainers will figure it out in no time flat. They will see through it, and you'll see guys get hot, but then not last. They won't stick around. Something is not there. Either the work ethic is not there, either the personality is not there. They're getting off horses and they're telling trainers the wrong things, or they're not showing up for workouts, or something's not right. But you'll see guys, they can't handle success, and they'll disappear. They'll get hot, and everybody will want them, and all of a sudden they'll disappear. You had a discussion with Tony Black last week about the bug riders.
Yeah.
You know, that was an interesting discussion. Tony talking about trainers who use bug riders. It's funny because in California, like 30 years ago, bug riders were not popular at all. It was very hard to get started as a bug rider in California. The first one that I can recall getting hot was Pat Valenzuela, and he was an exceptional talent. I mean, exceptional. Horses just ran for him. They ran out from under him. He rode a rough race, a careless race sometimes, but he was one of the most gifted jockeys I've ever seen, naturally gifted. The saying that horses run for him was never truer than they did for Pat. And he when he lost his bug, he just kept right on going. He just kept winning races. It didn't matter. but he was really the first. And then Nakatani might have been the next bug rider. I know Tony Matos, I believe, had him when he had the bug. Tony's an excellent agent. Had Cordero and Pink Eye, and I think he had Corey when Corey was apprentice. But Corey was a great athlete, a wrestler, who then moved over to horses. I think Tony followed that same path. Tony Black followed that same path, wrestler to the jockey.
Same with Jeremy Rose.
Jeremy Rose, there, another example. But I guess what my point is that if you can't make that transition, a guy's riding you to get the 5 pounds, if you're just not, doesn't seem like you're talented enough, you're hot. You've got the bug, you're red hot. Everybody wants you. But then you lose the bug and it's a dual kind of thing because you lose the 5 pounds, so now you're not getting as live mounts as you got before. So you're going to win less, and it's now what can you do on equal weight? How good are you? Are you ready to play with the big boys? And that's where either the jock will make the step or he'll go back. It's kind of like when they bring a guy up from the minors in, let's say, baseball. First time around, the pitchers haven't seen him before. He's tearing the cover off the ball. And then the second time around, when they start a book on him, and they start throwing the ones that curve, and he's not doing so well. If he holds his own, he'll be a major leaguer a long time.
Absolutely.
That's all I know, Steve.
Yeah, well, that's plenty. That's no small thing. Johnny, John White's going to join us either next or after another trainer guest, but he's up next on Beat the Host and week three.
John's a Beat the Host veteran. He's been along since the very beginning. I think we're in like maybe the 20th season or something.
Oh, my God. Is it that long? Holy cow.
Well, how long have you been on the air?
I've been on 15. This is year 16.
Yeah, so 20's not that much further.
That's true. Good point. See, this circles right back to what we started, where I was shocked to learn that I'm only 7 years younger than Baffert. That alone is going to take all day to absorb that fact.
Yeah, and I know it's official that Baffert's birthday is today because we got the requisite Tom Quigley tweet wishing happy birthday to Bob Baffert. So I'm glad I scooped Quigley.
Well, I guess Baffert can't have the consistent opportunity that Bill Mott does to win on his birthday. The only time we don't hear that chestnut is when Mott's birthday is now a Monday or a Tuesday during the summer, because otherwise we got to endure that all summer long. Oh, it's almost Mott's birthday. Almost time for Mott to win on his birthday. It's like, oh my God, just stop, please. So, like, but I guess Baffert has, over the years, probably hit, there's been quite a few January 13ths that he had the opportunity. And of course, yesterday, Mother, I didn't mention that. She came running late
in
Kaluk and Queen. Yeah, she's all right. She's been sort of an underachiever.
And it was great to see Bruce Headley in the winner's circle presenting the trophy. It's just, anytime you can have a Bruce Headley sighting, it's the best. I think they have a bottle of champagne or something, and it looked like on television they were trying to get it back from Bruce, and Bruce wouldn't give it to them.
Well, that's the Don Johnson that champagne company that's sponsoring everything, right?
There you go. Yeah, the winners of every race are invited up to have a little.
It's the Run Happy of champagnes. Johnny, I appreciate it, and we will talk next week. Do you got any early predictions for championship games after the topsy-turvy weekend of football?
You know, I don't know how much time we have left. I don't want to back you up, but
not a lot.
I have a future play on San Francisco. I've wagered on them to win the division and the conference. Why I didn't put the Super Bowl on there, I don't know. But so I've got 8-1 on them to win the conference.
Wow.
So that wager's won, right? Because if you beat the market, you win. That's what they say. But try taking that to the grocery store. It doesn't work. and I can't believe I did this week. I made a very small wager on a guy, on a golfer. Cameron to win the Sony in Hawaii this past week. And they're playing at 11 o'clock last night. They went to sudden death and won it. And I was barely awake to see the end of it, but he won the sudden death. He was let's see, was plus 100. No, he's plus 1,200. So he's bet 100 to win 1,200. And I put $25 on him.
How about you?
I like the way he played in the President's Cup. I watched him there. You know, he's an Australian. He's young, you know. Oh, that's the other thing. I know we don't have time. Well, look out for young. There's a changing of the guard in sports, all sports. It's time for new blood. Quarterbacks, you saw it this weekend. You've seen it happen. Quarterbacks, golfers. I don't know about other sports, but those two I noticed.
Well, the only place that there isn't a changing of the guard is in the director's category for the Oscars, where they managed to round up every, you know, white male they could find. That hasn't changed.
Well, I'm talking age. I'm not talking age.
Well, mostly old white men versus the opportunities. I think there was one. I think they did. There's the Asian, the Korean film. But there was one not changing of the guard. So I wanted to slip that in. There you go. Yeah. That's the social commentary of the day.
But I noticed this now. I'm looking at the young guys a little bit. Who's gonna be the next star? There will be one, you know.
Well, it's not going to be Lamar. Even if it is Lamar Jackson, it's not going to be this year. So that was quite something, honestly. I mean, there's upsets where you say, oh, there's an upset, and then there's like slack jawed, unbelievable, and that was quite something.
How about down 24 to nothing? That was quite something.
Well, I'll tell you what, the show that was going on, the parallel show to watch was actually on Twitter, where the piling on and the attacks on Andy Reid during those first, it was literally a total of they play a 60-minute game, and they'd played, I think at that point, a total of what, 18 minutes. So, the game was barely, over a quarter old, and I guess nobody had watched Kansas City all year. And granted, the door was opened for them, but still, you're talking about a team that then went out and did exactly what you would have thought possible, which is to score in two and three play drives, you know, one after the other.
And that quarterback, he goes into the young superstar category.
Yeah, no, he's terrific. He's no doubt about it. Well, I was happy for Andy Reid, who it's hard not to be happy for. But, I mean, the way people were attacking, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, and it really wasn't any decision that he made. You know, it wasn't a coaching decision. Things happened. Yeah.
Kelce dropping passes? Come on. How often is that going to happen?
Yeah. When you're leading. What? How to bring your opponent back into a football game?
That was strange. That was very strange. We were just getting home at that point. You also, I don't know if you saw, did you see, not to take swings, but the creep as a the moron from Dallas who's just a clown, just a total clown, saying that could you imagine if Tom Brady had a tight end target the way Mahomes has Kelce and Wentz has Ertz, and the entire internet reminded him that
his name was Gronk.
Tom Brady had Gronkowski for 8 years or whatever it was.
Sometimes you just got to scroll.
There you go. There you go.
Move on.
Johnny, this was fun as always, and we will convene next Monday.
Stevie, catch you later.
Johnny D, everybody. And Beat the Host, and our Beat the Host host this week will be John White. We're going to talk to John in this hour. I think we're going to slip in a visit first, though. And John, I hope, standing by. So we got a little less than an hour and plenty more to do. Back after this at the races.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Home, at the track, or on the go, ExpressBet is your way to play the races. ExpressBet provides legal and secure online and mobile betting on more than 300 of the world's top tracks and all the big events. And when you sign up for an ExpressBet account today with promo code BYK, that's B-Y-K, you'll receive a $125 bonus. Once you've signed up, you can take your wagering experience to the next level with XB Rewards, ExpressBet's industry-leading loyalty program. Earn points for every bet you make and cash them in on everything from wagering credits to exclusive racetrack experiences. So what are you waiting for? Sign up for ExpressBet today using promo code BYK. That's B-Y-K to get your $125 bonus. Conditions apply. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
145 over 92.
180 over 111.
182 over 100. And I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest. And then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life.
A lot of people don't understand, including myself, I didn't, now I do, the impact of having a stroke.
My memory is shot.
When I woke up, I couldn't speak.
If I would have followed a treatment plan, I would not be in this situation.
It's a tough journey.
Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you. Start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
It's a new life, but I'm going to make it better. I'll come back. Ask your doctor, check your blood pressure.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Sirius XM.